It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds, it's Monday the 6th of November 2023. This is for professional investors only, never ever investment advice. As I said last week, I'm just back from Kilconomics now, the economics festival held every year in Kilkenny in the Republic of Ireland. You should definitely go next year. I've got my tickets in front of me, spread out. What if the Fed makes a mistake? Five mega trends shaping our world. Inflation, who's to blame? Greed, printing or pandemics? And Noah Smith, one-man think tank. And Noah Smith's session actually provoked me to check out his Substack, which is a blogging platform on the internet, around a concept he talked about called the stasis subsidy. If you Google the Build Nothing country, it was written about the United States of America, but probably relevant to a country near you right now, in which he says in this article, by allowing the population who all say they want energy security, all say they want lots of new housing, better infrastructure, etc., etc., but they're allowed by the state through the planning process and through protests and politicians who don't want to upset their local electorate, they're effectively being subsidised. So the population is being subsidised via higher costs and higher taxes and higher pollution are the things that counterbalance that subsidy. The subsidy seems cheap or free, but it's a subsidy that allows them to maintain their local built environment without any changes whatsoever. And it becomes incredibly expensive for a nation. So worth a go, a stasis subsidy that doing nothing is actually effectively a tax on your future to some extent. On the inflation, who's to blame story, on that panel with Paul McCulley, worth again having a look at him on Wikipedia. He's always at Kilconomics, always interesting. Once a long time ago of PIMCO with Bill Gross, I think, and I think it's worth acknowledging some of the phrases he's coined in his career, whether it's the Greenspan put, the Minsky moment, irrational exuberance, shadow banking. I think that he came up with all of those. I might be wrong, but I think they're all his. Also on that panel, Lee Rose Downey, who was also excellent, and Mark Blythe, who once appeared on this podcast talking at the time about Angrynomics, the book he wrote with Eric Lonergan about populism and economics. At this panel on inflation, he made the case that even the 1970s inflation boom was all about shocks, whether that was mainly about oil shocks, frankly, at the time, and wars. So the 1970s inflation gets, well, the person who gets the credit for defeating it is really Volcker. And, you know, Volcker came in and took over the Fed 1980-ish and started to put interest rates up really, really aggressively. I think Mark Blythe would argue that inflation, just purely on the fact that, you know, these were price shocks that raised the level of prices. They weren't persistent. There wasn't a spiral in any way. They would have just come down by themselves. And you shouldn't give Paul Volcker any credit for defeating inflation. In fact, he should be widely criticised for hiking rates and causing the massive recession, the massive high levels of unemployment that persisted throughout the 1980s, which is an interesting, I think probably overstating it argument from Mark Blythe, but interesting nevertheless. But it did make me wonder, if he's right, why should we have central banks at all? Should interest rates simply be a function of the supply and demand for money? You know, that's the how much people want to save, how much people want to borrow, and clearing independently of any central bank. I can't really work out why we need the central bank at all to control the money supply, except in the short, you know, smoothing out short term, which is, I guess, what central banks used to do, to be honest. You know, in the old days, Bank of England, for instance, I know in one of the big meeting rooms there used to be a weather vane on the top where they'd work out whether trading ships were going to be sailing down the Thames and therefore whether merchants would need more money and therefore they'd have to provide more money against bills of exchange. And that was the old way of central banking. Why are central bankers now deciding what the number should be and moving it up and down? Quite interesting, I think. One I need to go away and think about and ask someone clever about. So before I get on to the kind of extraordinary bond market rally that we've seen. It's been a long time since I've said that, and just quite how long. I guess you could point to the fact, well, I think we're now in a something like 32-month losing streak for US Treasuries, which is, you know, multiples higher than any other losing streak for US Treasuries. So hopefully we can maintain these levels of bond yields and end November and end that losing streak. Before I come on to talk to that, I want to quickly make a note of something that was on Blue Sky, which is the new platform that's taken over from Twitter stroke X, because all the economics and markets people have now left that platform, as you know. This was about longevity, and somebody quoted a paper that goes something like this. And it's really talking about super old people. So, you know, you see them in the paper every now and then, cheerfully recounting how they've done nothing but smoke cigarettes and drink neat whiskey, or occasionally they've eaten carrots or something like that. But, you know, they're 120 or something, and the villagers come out to celebrate them. And so this paper said, well, what should explain whether people get old to that extent or not? And they say, well, perhaps eating lots of vegetables, strong social connections, genetic markers, blah, 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 should be the things that would make people live a very, very long time, i.e. not just 100, but 110, 120. The paper, and I'm afraid I don't have the title of the paper, otherwise I'd go and look in more detail, but the paper says these are the actual predictors of remarkable longevity and what they call super centenarian status. In the United States, that status is predicted by the absence of vital registration, i.e. the most significant factor on whether you find a really old person is that they don't have a birth certificate. In the UK, Italy, Japan and France, remarkable longevity is instead predicted by regional poverty, old age poverty, material deprivation, low incomes, high crime rates, remote region of birth, worse health and an absence of generally old people in the hood. In addition, super centenarian birth dates are concentrated on the first of the month and days divisible by five. Patterns, here's the clincher, indicative of widespread fraud and error. In other words, if you find a really super, super old person, the chances are it's an old person who many years ago assumed the identity of an aging relative in order to claim their pension or some other fraud along those time, you know, that kind of thing. So really interesting idea. And, you know, again, thanks to Paul McNamara for pointing it out. Before you sue me, if you're really, really old, you might just be really, really, really old. But economically, statistically, hopefully you've been eating your vegetables to achieve that agedness. Finally, bond markets, the rally, which I noted on Friday, started in the middle of last week with the US Treasury refunding announcement, i.e. its bond issuance number announcement. That was lower than expected, albeit marginally. But Friday's very weak jobs number, the non-farm payroll jobs, triggered another big rally in bonds and a sell-off in the US dollar against pretty much everything. It was also a risk-off week, so what a week it was for the old 60-40 portfolios, which been having a pretty miserable time over the course of the summer. So 10-year US Treasury bonds were down from nearly 5% to 4.6%. 30-year gilt yields are nearly 30 basis points lower from their October highs as well. And no more Fed funds hikes, no more Federal Reserve hikes are priced in by bond markets. And there's 50% chance, or more than that, of a cut by May next year, and nearly 425 basis point rate cuts priced in for the Fed by the end of 2024. So a question we come into this week asking is this the peak? And if it is, then history shows us that, you know, as the market's pricing in, cuts come around 8 months later. Catch up later in the week. Bye.